Welcome to the Earth First Update, bringing you all the environmental news you can use for over 20 years. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org on Thursday, January 4th, 2018. I'm asking you to please have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down the names, addresses, emails, web pages, and phone numbers so you can take action for the environment. Let's start with announcements. This Saturday, January 6th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park, the Habitat Restoration Group of the Santa Cruz Native Plant Society will be having their restoration in Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. Linda writes, they're off to a good start, and now with the rains and them continuing, they should be able to get a whole lot of invasive broom pulled over the next 2 months. She hopes to see you soon. In addition to the, and that starts at 10 a.m. at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. I'll give you directions in a minute. She's also having restorations on January 13th, January 27th, February 3rd, February 10th, and February 24th at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. Here's the directions. To get there, go up Graham Hill Road from Santa Cruz. When you come down the hill into Felton, turn right at the light and head up East Ziani Road for 2 miles. Turn left on Quail Hollow Road, and the park entrance is on the left half a mile up. Meet them in the gravel parking lot on the left-hand side of the entrance road. If you need further information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 831-462-4041. You could email her at redwoodrn@packbell.net. That's redwoodrn@packbell.net. Or visit their website, www.cruzcnps.org. That's www.cruzcnps.org. And Save the Matol Ancient Forest is having an action training camp in the Matol Watershed January 12th through the 15th. It will include a large indoor space for some of the workshops and meals, but please be prepared to camp. They want you to RSVP. When you do, let the organizers know. If you require indoor sleeping space, we'd love for you to be there. Bring rain gear. I will repeat. Bring your rain gear. Donations of food for the kitchen and blockaders and money are very helpful, but no one will be turned away for lack of funds. To RSVP, send email to matolactioncamp@riseup.net. That's matolactioncamp@riseup.net. And that those dates are January 12th through the 15th. And they will let you know where it's happening when you RSVP. There is also an action camp in the Hudson Valley in New York, January 19th through the 22nd. It's a climb training and action camp on Minisink Lenape land in New York. They're having a weekend of climb training. Learn about the current campaign against the Valley Lateral Pipeline and many other infrastructure projects threatening this bioregion. We need all hands on deck. If you can't make it to the camp but still want to come through and plug in, let us know. Send email to hudsonvalleyearthfirst@riseup.net, and they want to know if you're coming. Once again, that action camp in the Hudson Valley of New York is January 19th through the 22nd. Looking for a job? Cal Trout is hiring. Cal Trout is a statewide nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting California's wild native trout species and the habitats supporting them. The Sierra Headwaters Office of Cal Trout, based in Mammoth Lakes, California, focuses on watershed resources, planning, restoration, and policy to benefit downstream fish populations and human communities. This position offers an exciting opportunity to learn and contribute to advanced ecosystems and fisheries restoration and management. Although not limited to, a major focus for the project coordinator position will be to support a meadow restoration projects, primarily within the Inyo and Sequoia National Forest. More specifically, Meadow's work will focus on conducting field-based assessments and understanding the outcomes of meadow restoration projects, focusing on three primary areas: greenhouse gases, hydrology, and biodiversity. The field sites are remote. They don't have phone service and require hiking to access. And so you better have backcountry experience and the ability to work independently for this position. You will require at least a bachelor's degree in aquatic ecology, fisheries, biology, geology, hydrology, environmental science, or related field, have remote field data collection experience, be able to work well independently or in a crew, have backcountry field work experience, be able to carry significant weight, that's 50 pounds or 25 kilos for sustained distances, be a positive, goal-oriented, and effective communicator. You need to have Microsoft Office competency. You must be trustworthy and reliable, be able to organize and coordinate field crews, and be able to do data entry organization and analysis. Your experience should include project management and reporting, the ability to quickly learn and implement field-based data collection protocols, NEPA and CEQA planning and permitting, GIS, education and outreach, and proposal development and grant writing. You can apply by sending a resume and a cover letter and a writing sample not to exceed 2 pages to lkezy@caltrout.org. That's lkezy at caltrout.org. And the deadline is Monday, January 22nd. And Buffalo Field Campaign's upcoming winter actions. There will be a rally against Yellowstone's trap on January 20th in Gardner, Montana. Gather at the Roosevelt Arch from noon to 2 p.m. Bring banners. The Buffalo Field Campaign's Week of Action is February 12th through 18th, and they have a whole bunch of stuff going on that week, which I will provide information about in an upcoming broadcast. If you want more information, go to the webpage www.buffalofieldcampaign.org and check out their upcoming actions. And in the Hambach Forest of Germany, there has been an incendiary sabotage against the open pit coal mine there. In this story by Sans Attendre from Attac, translated for the Earth First Journal Newswire. They write, on December 24, 2017, we burned the cables that supply power to the Hambach open pit coal mine. Thus, part of the huge machine has at least been paralyzed there. In this case, the cables were visible in the open pit. The Hambach open pit mine is a bigger hole than the city of Cologne, Germany, where lignite is being mined. During the combustion of this coal, there is emitted an incredible amount of carbon dioxide, but also other substances such as arsenic, which in fact contribute to climate change. Climate change has been disastrous and will have disastrous consequences, including droughts, floods, storms, causing many people to die or be deprived of their livelihood. In addition, many people are forced to leave their villages for this coal mine, forced to give in front of this project of exploitation, which deforests the forest of Hambach, this marvelous and very old forest. Stop coal now. They say, merry crisis and happy new fear. And translated from the German by barricade.info. And you can find out more about the fight against coal mining in the Hambach Forest at hambacherforest.org. That's HambacherForest.org. And a Russian environmental activist has been hospitalized after a beating. A leading Russian environmental activist said on Friday he had been hospitalized after being severely beaten by unknown assailants in the southern city of Krasnodar. Andrea Rodomakka head of the Environment Watch on the Northern Caucasus non-governmental organization, told Reuters he and a group of activists were assaulted late on Thursday upon returning from the Black Sea coastal city of Glensdisk, where they were documenting the illegal construction of a mansion for high-ranking officials. "I think the attack is connected with this," Rotomakas told Reuters, adding the assailants had stolen the activists' cameras. Rotomaka said he had sustained a concussion, a broken nose, and broken teeth in the attack. The regional branch of the Russian Interior Ministry, in a statement sent to Reuters, said authorities were investigating the attack by what it said were three assailants. Members of the Environmental Watch on the North Caucasus have had run-ins with authorities in the past. Group member Yevgeny Vishteko, who campaigned against ecological damage from construction work in the 2014 Sochi Olympics, was sentenced to 3 years in prison after being convicted of damaging the regional governor's property. Russian civil society groups, including our environmental organizations, have deplored what they say are efforts by authorities to exercise more control over the activities. This was reported by Gabrielle Tetroff-Farber with editing by Mark Heinrich, Thomson Reuters. And a community leader has been tortured and killed over land trafficking in Peru in this story from The Guardian, written by Dan Collins in Lima, Peru. A criminal gang involved in land trafficking has tortured and murdered a community leader in northern Peru, according to his wife and local villagers who witnessed the killing. Jose Napoleon Tarrio Astonidas, 50, was attacked by four men in his home on Saturday night. His wife, Flor Vallejos, told police he was bound by his hands and feet, beaten with a stick, and strangled with an electric cable. As she was covered in a blanket and forced to listen to her husband's screams, the attackers told him they had been paid to kill him, Vallejos told a national radio station. A local police chief said a murder investigation had been opened and the killers were being hunted. The community leader in El Mirador village, Tarrio, known as Napo, opposed land traffickers who had taken over parts of the Capari Ecological Reserve and were clearing land and sowing crops. The reserve is a wildlife hotspot, one of the largest populations of the rare spectacled bear in South America. Vallejo said her husband had received death threats from people within his community for opposing deforestation and land invasions in the private reserve. He was threatened 2 days before he was killed, says Juan Carrasco, a fellow member of the Muchik Santa Catalina de Chongoyape farming community in Peru's northern Lampayeque region. "He was a brave man and never lost his nerve. He said we must organize our own patrol to evict the land invaders because the authorities would not take action." This was to be expected, Ana Juarez, a biologist working in the area, told The Guardian. Juarez claims the murderers are known to the community and were responsible for the brutal killing of three farmers in October of 2016 in reprisal for an eviction of land traffickers from the nearby San Francisco de Sales community. Famous for its spectacled bears, the inspiration for the fictional Paddington Bear, the Chaparral Reserve receives visitors from all over the world. It is considered a model for community ecoterrorism and generates income for the local people. The reserve is also home for the critically endangered white-winged guan, a bird once thought extinct. Northwest Peru is considered a hotspot for endemic bird species. And overlooked ecocides in Latin America and the Caribbean in 2017 in this story from Carlos Ruperto Fermin, as found in Rebellion, and as carried on the Earth First Newswire. Although many more ecocides were perpetrated in the year 2017, if we stay quiet and do not denounce environmental problems from our own communities, we'll be accomplices of national and foreign corporations. With the power of social networks in our hands, there are no excuses to evade the ecological commitment in favor of the planet. We report crimes on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and WhatsApp. Let us use the technological tools for welfare of the environment, forgetting the internal indifference and awakening a new consciousness. From January to December and from Monday to Sunday, Mother Earth demands respect, love, and willingness to change in human beings to turn the bitter environmental nightmare of 2017 into a light of positive hope that illuminates the roads of 2018. Here they are, La Totoca, Colombia, Garbage took over the desert's fragile ecosystem after being used for concerts and a viewpoint for the solar eclipse of August 2017. Lanquihue in Chile, the magical waters from the legend of La Carayen turned into a lamentable fecal estuary in 2017 as this lake received continuous sanitary services wastewater discharges. Number 8. Sierra Nevada of Santa Marta, Colombia. In order to connect high-voltage cables, parts of this native forest were clear-cut, almost 2,000 feet by 50 feet wide, killing many endemic species of plants. Nuevo León, Mexico. Almost 20,000 gallons of recycled lubricating oil were spilled into La Silla, Santa Catarina, and San Juan Rivers by the company Retalsa, killing fish and affecting communities up to 20 miles away. In Semacota, Colombia, a Perex Resources truck rolled over, spilling 5,800 gallons of motor fuel oil and contaminating drinking waters from Colorado and Magdalena Rivers. In Mahahual, Mexico, part of the Mesoamerican reef system was destroyed because of a boat from a diving company, Pepe Diving Mahahual, which irresponsibly dropped anchor into the reef, detaching pieces of coral without consideration for its great ecological sensitivity. Chiriquí and Bocas de Toro, Panama, a large entrance road was paved for La Amistad International Park, damaging the biological diversity present in the biosphere reserve. San Nicolas Talminca, Mexico, as part of continued construction of the new international airport of Mexico City, toxic waste was extracted from the ancient lake of Texcoco and deposited into the Talminca sinkholes, which are recharge zones for valued aquifers. The mud contained dangerous chemicals such as chlorides, chromium, boron, and carbonate. In Trinidad and Tobago, the state company PetroTrin spilled 300 barrels of oil from the Ponte a Pierre refinery, which reached the waters off of the Venezuelan coast, the islands of Nueva Esparta State and the beaches of Sucre State and the Los Roques Archipelago all suffered the environmental damage of a hydrocarbon leak. In Venezuela, over 3,000 trees were felled for use in Guarimba street blockades. When money imposes its own rules on the game of planet Earth, an ecological imbalance is established in our Latin American territories, which increases with the judicial inaction of public agencies, which are unable to apply current environmental laws to punish the criminal acts quickly. And the Sea Shepherd has saved an endangered totoaba fish following a second drone shooting in the northern Gulf of Mexico, or Gulf of California, excuse me. Despite gunshots being fired at its drones again, conservation group Sea Shepherd, together with the Mexican Navy, drove poachers off a protected vaquita refuge and saved the life of an endangered totoaba fish from their illegal nets. This was the second shootout and the first in daylight directed at Sea Shepherd in the upper Gulf of California, Mexico, in less than a week. In the first instance, reported here on the Earth First Update, occurred on Christmas Eve, and poachers shot down the conservationist night vision drone. The NGO is currently in the area for Operation Milagro 4, which it says actively protecting the totoaba bass and the near-extinct vaquita porpoise. On December 30th, the Sea Shepherd vessel, motor vessel John Paul de Joria, was patrolling for poachers and gillnets within the vaquita refuge. At 3:30 in the afternoon, the crew identified a poaching skiff through binoculars, visually pulling up a net less than one nautical mile away. Even though its night drone was shot down by an automatic rifle 6 days earlier, Sea Shepherd still sent another drone to investigate the poacher's activity from above. The drone came quickly confirmed the crew's initial assessment. Poachers were pulling out a gillnet in the middle of the vaquita refuge in broad daylight. Poachers are targeting the critically endangered totoaba fish to sell its swim bladder on the black market in China and Hong Kong for unproven medicinal properties. One swim bladder can collect more than $20,000. For that reason, the fish is commonly known as aquatic cocaine. Poachers may set these gillnets to catch one species, but the nets don't discriminate, catching all that swim in these waters, including the most endangered marine mammal in the world, the vaquita porpoise. With clear skies overhead, it didn't take long for the poachers to spot the drone above them. The Sea Shepherd crew heard 6 gunshots from the bow of the Marine Conservation's vessel. The drone operator, Jack Hutton, saw the poachers pull the net into their skiff before taking off, and he made the decision to fly the drone back to the ship. Footage from the incident shows that one of the individuals in the skiff had a handgun and used it to shoot at the drone. Captain Benoit Sardigian informed the Mexican Navy of the situation, and they arrived shortly on the scene. After checking that the Sea Shepherd vessel was safe, the Navy began to pursue the poacher's skiff. And the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field. As the new year begins, things remain relatively quiet here in the land of the last wild buffalo. Though we are finally skiing on our patrols, there's still not too much snow to speak of, and this milder weather continues to stem the tide of buffalo migration. There was a lone bull out on Horse Butte for a couple of weeks. He managed to elude a few hunt parties who were looking for him, but unfortunately, a state hunt party from Bozeman ended up finding him last weekend. Montana's buffalo hunt hotline hasn't been updated for quite some time, so it's possible they were tipped off by some locals or just took their chances and got lucky. Not so lucky for the bull, of course. A few family groups were on the move, but at the time of this writing, they are on safe ground where they cannot be hunted. Recognizing a few collared adult females, we know that these buffalo families have already been shot at numerous times this winter, and they are all pretty skittish, having lost members of their families to hunters. The buffalo know where they are safe, and the first group to reemerge made a beeline for the Galanis property, never stopping to graze until they got there. Once they arrived, you could almost hear a group sigh of relief as they relaxed and started to graze. We are hopeful that the matriarchs of these groups will keep themselves and their children safe, but already hunt parties are out just waiting for them to cross the line from the safety of private land over to public land where they can be shot. Once a buffalo migration begins in earnest, it's going to be a killing spree in both the Hebgen and Gardner Basins. For the buffalo who migrate into the Gardner Basin, they also face the threat of Yellowstone's buffalo trap. And a proposal would allow offshore drilling in 90% of United States waters in this story from Mother Nature Network, as written by Noel Kirkpatrick. A new offshore drilling map that would open up vast stretches of water for oil and gas drilling is just in the proposal stage, but it's sure to be a conservation starter. Announced today by Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, the National Outer Continental Shelf Oil and Gas Leasing Program for 2019 to 2024 draft proposal would open up more than 90% of all United States ocean water for leasing by oil and gas companies. We're embarking on a new path for energy dominance in America, particularly on offshore, Ryan Zinke said as he announced the plan. This is a clear difference between energy weakness and energy dominance. We are going to become the strongest energy superpower. The proposal opens up the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans to drilling and increases opportunities in the Gulf of Mexico and the Arctic Ocean. The only area not included in the leasing plan is Alaska's North Aleutian Basin. The draft is a result of President Donald Trump's 2017 executive order that asked Zinke to review and overhaul the Obama administration's final 5-year proposal for offshore drilling. That plan included a ban on offshore drilling in the Arctic and the Pacific and complemented a ban on Pacific oil drilling. The proposal does not go into effect immediately. A 60-day comment period is next, in which the public, state officials, and Congress and various other interest groups can provide feedback on the proposal. A lethal fungus that causes white nose syndrome may have an Achilles heel, a new study reveals. The fungus behind white nose syndrome, a disease that has ravaged bat populations in North America, may have an Achilles heel, ultraviolet light. White nose syndrome has spread steadily over the past decade and is caused by a fungus known as P. destructans. In the course of genomic analysis of the fungus, a team of scientists found that the fungus was highly sensitive to UV light. The fungus can only infect bats during hibernation because it has a strict temperature growth range of about 38 to 68 degrees Fahrenheit. However, treating bats for the disease during hibernation is challenging, so any weakness of the fungus may be good news for managers trying to develop strategies. In a study published on January 2nd in the journal Nature Communications entitled Extreme Sensitivity to Ultraviolet Light in the Fungal Pathogen Causing White Nose Syndrome in Bats, the research team suggests that P. destructans is likely a true fungal pathogen of bats that evolved alongside bat species in Europe and Asia for millions of years, but allowed Eurasian bats to develop defenses against it. In the course of comparing P. destructans to six closely related non-pathogenic fungi, researchers discovered that P. destructans is unable to repair DNA damage caused by UV light, which could lead to novel treatments for the disease. The study was founded by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And we found this story on the Environmental News Network. And the Center for Biological Diversity reports there are new protections for a rare salamander, including 420 miles of habitat. An important victory rings in the new year. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has protected the Black Warrior Water Dog Salamander under the Endangered Species Act, along with 420 river miles of critical habitat. These rare salamanders, found only in one river basin in Alabama, are on the brink of extinction because of ongoing habitat destruction and water pollution from agricultural and industrial operations. The Center for Biological Diversity petitioned for the salamander's protection in 2004 and again in 2010. This week's decision is a result of the Center for Biological Diversity's legal victory that has protected nearly 200 species. Aquatic salamanders like the Black Warrior Water Dog are indicator species that reflect the health of the environment we all share, said the center's Elise Bennett. Protecting these special amphibians and their habitat will help protect water quality and for both water dogs and people. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. You can tune in every Thursday evening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org at 9 p.m. Or you could listen to a rebroadcast on Free Radio Fridays at 3 p.m. as part of our Environment Friday programming. You could also listen to WMNB 107.1 North Adams, Massachusetts, Fridays at 5:30 in the morning, KRFP 90.3 in Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m., KOWA 106.5 in Olympia, Washington, Saturdays at 7 a.m., WLSL 92.7 in Dade City, Florida, Sundays at noon, KHCF 89.9 in Morgan Hill and Gilroy, California, KGIG 104.9 in Modesto, California, KPHD 93.3 in Modesto, California, and Berkeley Liberation Radio at 104.1 in Berkeley, California. All broadcast the Earth First Update. Check their websites for schedules. Information, or you can always go to radioforall.net. That's radio the number for all.net, where you can listen online or download this or any previous Earth First Update. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and broadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and produced at Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening, and please do tune in next week for another Earth First Update.